Hey, all cheaters, and welcome to the Always Cheating Fantasy Podcast. My name is Josh. I'm here with Brandon. Brandon, how are you?
Doing all right, Josh. It's the international break. And let me tell you something. My wife went away for 1 month. This is a couple summers ago. And, you know, you live with your partner and you think they're going to be away for a month. Oh, boy, I'm just going to chill out. Are all these things I'm going to check off, like my bachelor list? It's going to be a great time.
Yep.
Like, after just like 2 or 3 days, I'm just like, where is my wife? I'm kind of lonely and bored. And that is what the international break has been for me this week, because I am having a stinker of an FPL season. Mm-hmm. And I thought, you know what,
as is widely known.
Sure.
Long-time listeners.
It's been on the front page of the Always Cheating Times for a good solid month now. I thought I needed a break, but I am already itching for Game Week 5 to get underway. So let's talk about it.
Yeah. I mean, you know, when you're not hitting at the roulette wheel, the plan, you don't want to walk away from the table, right? You just want to...
you want to break even.
Yeah. Maybe you go have a cigarette break. You know, you walk around the outside of the pit for a minute. You have a cigarette break, and then you go right back in. You know, to get those to recoup those losses.
Sure.
The international break. I guess some things never change. Everything in the world has changed in 2020, except the international break still being something that feels like it takes like 3 months to play out. And actually, I'm never really, the first one is always the worst. The first one, I'm always like, all right, we're 4 weeks in, I finally have a handle on what I'm doing here. I burned my wild card at the end of game week 4. I was like ready to go. And now it's like a week later and I'm like, why did I burn the wild card? Like, what's going on right now? Thankfully some things never change, Brandon. Everything is completely insane in 2020, but international breaks being a little too long, exactly 1 week too long, Brandon, is still a problem. So I'm very excited for us to have this weekend in the rearview mirror, looking ahead to game week 5. So we're going to talk about that. We're going to talk about my wild card, which is active right now. It is the wild card of question marks. There are so many issues that need to get resolved before my wild card is finalized. But I'm going to walk through my wild card team early on in this podcast. We're going to preview game week 5. And then we're going to answer a lightning round, Brandon. This is a very special lightning round this time, because all of our answers this time are properly going to be 30 seconds. We're not going to break the rule as we often do. It's going to be a very tight lightning.
Okay, I'm stressing out about this already. Mm-hmm. Jeez, yeah. You should have probably texted me this morning that the rule would be enforced today.
So we're going to get right into my wild card here, but we'll talk about it more in a little while. But just a quick note, the Harvey Milk Mustache Cup, our Patreon Cup, kicks off in game week 5 to celebrate that. And that's open to Patreon supporters at any pledge level. So you can go to patreon.com/alwayscheating for that. And to celebrate that, we are going to do a full social media blackout on Saturday, this upcoming Saturday. And we're going to spend the entire day in the main feed of the Always Cheating Slack, which is open to Patreon supporters at any level as well. So if you are interested in becoming a patron, this is a great week to do it, because we have this FA Cup style competition that's kicking off. All you have to do is just join the Patreon mini league and you get to join that.
Yeah.
It's very exciting.
And then we'll interact all Saturday on the Slack. I will even be in non-main channel feeds. I'll be in I booted up FIFA 21 this weekend, pretty hardcore. Got the new game. I'm looking to start a pro club, and hopefully some of our Patreon members are on PlayStation 4 as well, and we can get some pro clubs going. All right, Josh, your wild card.
Yep.
Where are you right now?
Yeah, and I buried it a little bit in last week's podcast. I think I mentioned it like 39 minutes in or something, mostly because I wasn't quite ready to talk about it yet. I wildcarded on Saturday shortly after the Man United Spurs match. And I think, you know, I kind of forced my hand a little bit with the wild card, because I had played a rage transfer the day before, which I never do ever. And I moved to Jimenez from Timo Werner on Saturday. Okay. So mad at myself for not just making that move earlier that I decided, you know what, I'm just going to burn my transfer and do it now. Sure. I had also brought in James from Chelsea, and now it looks like he has possibly lost his spot. At the very least, it's a spot that's hugely under risk moving forward. So I felt like that was like I effectively like wasted a transfer. If anything, it was like I wasted two transfers because I was going to burn a transfer to take him out. You know, Mitro, like Fulham had looked okay, but I wasn't feeling very confident in him going forward just because I'm still even, you know, this is actually before the Ruben Loftus-Cheek. I actually feel a little bit better, but listen, if Ruben Loftus-Cheek is the reason you don't wildcard, you have like created a twisted pretzel of logic that, that doesn't really, you know, work together. So,
So ditching your Fulham assets is 100% the way to go. That is the path forward. No one's arguing that.
Yeah. Even if he bangs in like two this weekend, I still feel confident that long term I've made the
right. No regrets.
Yeah. The transfer deadline closing was a factor as well. I didn't want to put my wildcard before then just in case there were some wild moves. And in the end, it was fine. We can talk more about the transfer deadline in a little bit, but nothing that I was hugely. If anything, the move that I was most excited about was this Saeed Benrahma move, which just happened. I think like today that happened. Yeah. So, you know, I think that, you know, not too much change there. I know there is a school of thought that you should wait to play your wild card until later on in the first half of the season, because we are going to have these unplayed Man United, Man City, Villa Burnley matches as, yeah, those will be double game weeks, probably in game weeks 18 or 19. But you actually have to burn your wild card before game week 16 anyway. So my thinking was I'd have probably something like three transfer windows to bring in more players than I want. I think in general, people overrate how important double game weeks are and spend way too much time planning for them and taking out players that they really want. So I thought, you know what, I'm just going to burn my wild card now. I don't really love the... you know, like the heart of my team I was okay with, but everything around it I didn't like. Mm-hmm. I didn't like my bench strength. I didn't like my defensive rotations. And, you know, like 245K overall, which is really not that bad for 4 weeks into the season. I feel pretty good about my position. But, you know, I think there's a school sometimes that a wild card can either be a like eject button for your team. Like, mm-hmm. I need to get out of this situation. And I think other times you can play the wild card just as a very aggressive, active move. Like, I am going to make these I'm going to correct these problems before they become problems. Mm-hmm. Which is not to say that you're taking out good players, but just that you've done okay. You see some weaknesses and you're just going to address all of them right now.
Right. And I think there are inflection points every season that, you know, every, whether it's every 4 weeks or every 8 weeks where there's a big swing in the fixture table or there is a big swing in team form. And we're going to talk quite a bit about Spurs. And I think Spurs represent one of those inflection points. And that's a team where a lot of managers such as yourself weren't invested in them. And that's a strength wildcard move to say, I see this inflection point coming. Spurs is the path forward. So that will actually help me carry my momentum. It's not that the wild card needs to create momentum. It's that you use your momentum to take you into that next phase of your FPL season.
Exactly. West Ham, Burnley, Brighton, West Brom are the next four teams that they play. And these are like one of the few teams where you've been getting consistent double-digit returns from those players. So, you know, I saw this great run of fixtures ahead. I felt, you know, and Sun's not even playing the international break. So I saw this great run of fixtures ahead. I saw an opportunity to be a little aggressive with Spurs. And I didn't see a good way to do it without – it would have taken me weeks to bring in these Spurs players otherwise. There just would have been no way to do it, partially because – of this infamous rage transfer on Saturday, a very rare rage transfer. So that's kind of the rationale. And I spent a little too long explaining it, but I think it's worth walking through why I would do this. And I do think that, you know, the COVID stuff, which is the other reason you might want to wait, is like what happens if like nine players scattered across the Premier League get COVID? Do you want like a fail safe? But I mean, for me, I don't know. I mean, like that, I'm just going to take the gamble that that's not going to happen. And I mm-hmm. think it's going to stay a trickle of COVID cases. I certainly don't think it's going to go away. But I also think it's extremely, extremely unlikely that we're going to have a game week where all of a sudden 27 different players come down with COVID.
Well, I don't think you can predict that. I don't know if it's unlikely or likely. It could happen. The point I would make would be don't waste your time trying to predict whether that will happen. Either it happens or it doesn't, and you can't control it. So you just have to play the FPL season that's in front of you. So, global pandemics are a funny thing, and the sooner you accept that they're out of your control, the better.
Right, exactly. And maybe having a wild card is a hedge against anything crazy happening, but it comes down to managerial style. I think there's a certain kind of fantasy manager who is very much a safety first manager. And that's just never been a style of mine. And so I thought it was reasonable to make the move now, and maybe it'll come back to haunt me, but you know, so what? You know, we'll see if it actually hurts me. So anyway, my team, very quickly, I've got Martinez in the back. You and I talked about this a little bit on our Patreon podcast this week, but to me, he is the clear favorite in the sub 5 million category. I'm not even sure anybody else is really close to him as far as players that I would want, you know, in the keeper spot long term.
Yeah, if you look at the teams that are represented by 4.5 GK, specifically Southampton, Brighton, and Villa, which of those three are the best team all around? Like, forget who is the best goalkeeper. Who's the best team? And I think Villa, you know, with 9 points now on the table, have shown they are the best team. Brighton and Southampton have been very up and down, whereas Villa look like they will at least be more consistent throughout the run of the entire season. So, yeah, I think that's your vote for Martinez right there.
Yeah, and the only other player that I would consider would just be going up to 5 million for Gaita. Who I just kind of trust a lot. And I feel like he's maybe like a season long set and forget type keeper. But in the end, I think you can probably approximate Gaita with Martinez. And so, yeah, so that's how I ended up there. No Jordan Pickford, Brandon, just couldn't bring myself to
shocking
to do it. Too many howlers. And, you know, I think for some of the other players, when you look at Matt Ryan, for example, a lot of times, you know, the decision comes down to whether you want a 4.5 player from one of those teams, right? Like, I'd rather have Lamptey than Ryan. I would rather have Kyle Walker-Peters over McCarthy. So in some ways, if you think about it that way, you kind of backdoor your way into a keeper, because there's really not a center back that I want on Villa. I mean, I guess Konsa would be fine, but you know, not
yeah. And the most appealing defenders for Villa are at least 5.0. I mean, notably Mings and Cash, I think, are their standout defenders. And
yeah,
going by your price analysis, yeah, that's just more than you want to be spending. So you go with Martinez at 4.7.
The rest of my defense, and you know, again, this is we're a week out and a lot's going to change. And I think the biggest thing for me is I have to decide what to do with my Liverpool defender spot. And you know, I'm not going to overreact to them conceding 7 goals, but I am super worried about Adrian in goal, and I'm just debating whether I want to keep Adrian when or whether I want to keep a Liverpool defender when as long as Adrian's back there, like, is there just going to be like a howler match, which there kind of was last season when he took over for Alisson. So at the moment I have Castagna and I've got Castagna, Mitchell, Lamptey, Ayling, and Sace. And what's incredible about this, Brandon, is all 5 of these players could get replaced with 5 separate players before next Saturday's deadline. I don't feel incredibly strongly about any of them. Sace, I feel pretty good about, but I think he's a little bit of a risk now that he's been kind of slotted into this left wing back role. That's a spot. It's not a natural spot for him. He has not played well the last few weeks. And so a little bit of concern there. Ayling, I feel pretty good about, but I'm certainly not married to him. I mean, you know, Leeds have not kept a clean sheet so far this season, and I'm not sure
this pick, this will. The Ayling pick, you've likened him to Doherty the way he gets forward. This is your pick where you want to look smart when this pick comes through,
right?
That's why, and that's why you're married to this pick right now, I think.
Yeah, well, actually, you know, I jumped the gun there. It was like one of those things I said, and then immediately, as soon as I said it, I realized I was wrong. They did keep a clean sheet in game week 3, and he got 2 bonus points when they kept a clean sheet in that match, too. And they kept a clean sheet in game week 3, so I'm totally, like, just rejiggering my thought process here. They kept a clean sheet in Game Week 3. It just shows you how not married I am to all these picks, Brandon. And I thought he looked really aggressive in Game Week 4. So I don't want to spend too long on the defense because I'm still working things out. The point here is that they're all cheap. And I've got Lamptey, but I've got to wait until he's healthy. This is like a recurring theme with a lot of the players in my squad. So I've got Lamptey as long as he stays healthy out of his training this week. Mitchell, I'm a little, you know, we'll see how Patrick Van Aanholt looks this week. If he is back in training, it looks like he's only a week or two away, then I probably have to drop Mitchell now because it's just that'll ultimately just become a problem for me long term if I have this non-playing player back there.
It'll be fine because you'll bench him. I think having a 4.0 defender is that's how most teams are set up, to have one defender whom you never play. And yeah. Mitchell is the guy because he'll be in, even if Van Aanholt comes back from injury, he's in reserve. Mitchell will be in reserve if anything were to happen to PBA.
Well, you know, the problem for me is that I think I want to play a 4-4-2 a lot moving forward. And so if I effectively punt on a defender spot, that means I'm sort of locked into my defenders week in and week out every week if Mitchell isn't playing. Okay. And so that then it becomes a little more of an issue, you know, because then I really don't have a lot of bench depth. So that's what I've got back there.
All right. What's going on in your midfield, Josh?
Yeah. Midfield. I've got Rodriguez, Sterling, Salah, Son, and my boy Bissouma on the bench. So pretty meaty midfield, obviously. Sterling, you know, again, as I mentioned before, I keep saying the word again for some reason. As I mentioned before, Sterling is a maybe. It depends on whether he trains this week, much like Lamptey, much like Kane. We're going to wait and see how these players do. But if Sterling just had one of these like kind of like fake injuries, like sometimes happens in original breaks, you know, a tightness in the hamstring, and he's back in training next week, then I'll feel really good about him because he will not have played all of these extra national matches until Aguero is back. He is
the... You will be feeling a tightness, Josh, when that Manchester City team sheet comes out.
Yeah, that's true. I will. That's very true. So we'll see what happens there. Rodriguez, he's just creating so many chances right now that he stays over Jack Grealish. Then Mo Salah, obviously not going anywhere. And then Son, just like a complete gimme pick at this moment, given his form, given how good he's looked so far this season. And then up front, I've got Kane. So a lot of money tied up there with Mr. Kane. But I think anybody wildcarding this game week should have Kane and Son. They're also not that expensive. I mean, Son is only 9 million, Kane's 10.5. Very good value considering their fixtures, considering the kind of form that they're in right now. I mean, everything is running through those two players. And with Gareth Bale to come, I don't think that hurts them at all. I think, if anything, it helps them. It's going to create more chances for everybody. So it'll be interesting to see how Bale and Son play together. I mean, Son is like a little bit kind of infamously like a little bit of a ball hog. So, you know, whether Bale gets touches and whether that impacts Son, I guess, is still a little bit of an open question.
I feel like Bale has come to Spurs to be like a writer in residence. He's just there to be a mascot. I haven't really given any thought to what it's going to look like when Bale gets on the pitch, because I guess I'm kind of in denial that he ever will. I think we have a few questions about Spurs coming up, so I'll save my spiel until then. But I'm
sure
I'm less sold on Tottenham than you are.
Okay, well, fair enough. So I'm pretty sold, and we talked a little bit last week too. But I'm just sold because I just think they're going to keep scoring goals, and if they're going to keep scoring goals, it's going to be those two that score. I mean, I guess I'm not sure that's like the most sophisticated way to look at it, but that's how I see it. I mean, it's, you know, when you've got a team that is shown an ability to score, and even that Newcastle match where they, you know, only scraped one goal together, they hit the post and the crossbar like five times in that match. It was kind of, you know, the scoreline did not really belie how dominant they were in that one. So then I've got Kane, Calvert-Lewin, and Ryan Brewster. And Brewster is, I suppose, the puntier pick. And if anyone, you know, so the things that could really strongly change would be Castagne and Brewster and me deciding what to do with those slots. And it's really tricky because it may ultimately, I mean, it could be that
Hamas would go even cheaper in your defense. You would say, you're saying you'd downgrade Castagna to upgrade Brewster to somebody like an Ollie Watkins?
Well, what's the point of having money in your defense right now? I'm not quite sure. I mean, I get it for for Liverpool, partially because it's defensive. I mean, you know, just because there's like a high ownership among all of those players. And, you know, if they can keep a clean sheet in even any one match, it could be a 200,000 rank drop for you. So, you know, even if I don't totally trust their defense, it can be a slightly safe play to do that. But everybody else, I mean, Leicester just, you know, conceded 3 at home to West Ham. I mean, their defense isn't that good, and nobody's is. And so, you know, if there's a, so I'm not completely convinced that spending any money back there is actually a worthwhile play. So that's the team. And I guess the most important thing is Son and Kane, and probably Calvert-Lewin, to be quite honest as well. You know, the Man City spot is an interesting one, but I feel like going without a Man City player is just one of those, like, just, you know, it's the next match they win 4-0. Everyone's going to be like, all right, like, how do we bring a Man City players in? It's just, it's inevitable.
It's wild times that you just said Man City spot as in singular. Like, that is what's going on this season where you feel you only need one Manchester City player in this wild card. You only need one Liverpool player in this wild card.
It's kind of wild.
It's like, I mean, that is the story that this season is telling us, what's going on, and you kind of just have to ride the wave. So what I like about your wild card team is you're clearly riding the wave. What scares me about your wild card team is there are a lot of unknowns here. So that's something you're going to have to reckon with over the course of the next week.
Yeah, I mean, it's the unknown thing is really tricky because there were unknowns 2 weeks ago. There were unknowns last week. You know, so it's like, are things ever going to get settled this season? Or is
I'm not arguing that you played the wild card at the wrong moment. I just I think you're taking a lot of risks. You're risking a lot of assets that could have a lot of upside. But we just don't know fully yet. And of course, you never know. Like if we had Biff's almanac from the future, then this game would be a breeze. So good on you.
Yeah. I think it's really frustrating that there's no cheap way into Man City. That there's
no
that
Phil in order Foden for you.
Yeah. I mean, come on. Right. Like,
he was an early international break transfer for me after the performance against Leeds by City. Foden 2 blanks in a row, and looking at what I could get if I spent the money I had in the bank at that moment to upgrade him to James Rodriguez is just like that. It would be dumb to not do that. So Foden has exited my squad this break.
Yeah. And you could be right about the risk part of it. And I think this is a classic wildcard thing, which is that you wildcard into a particular team. And then every week that goes by, you start to shave away a few, you know, a few of the risks, and suddenly you end up with some more conventional picks. But that's typically a good thing. As long as you still keep a couple of risks in your team, you don't want your team to look just like everybody else. At least I don't. I don't think that's very fun.
Yeah, it's a little bit like the principles of marketing, right, Josh? So you've got to, if you're going to advertise a local pizza place, you've got to send out 1,000 flyers to get like 10% response rate. Mm-hmm. And what you're doing with your wild card here is you're sending out 1,000 pizza flyers with all of your risky players with the expectation that at least one or two of them are going to come good. So the wild card offers you this opportunity to litter the neighborhood with flyers. Mm-hmm. Yeah, all in one swoop, as opposed to like piecemeal. One this week, I'm going to take this risk. Next week, I'm going to take this risk. So I think that's the real appeal of going full risk on a wild card, because then you're sort of taking away that waiting time.
Yeah, that is true. And, you know, in hindsight, maybe I don't know if the wild card was the best play or not. It really is going to require Spurs to do well. If they don't, then I will join the ranks of the failed wild carders, which I think is swelling, right? Games 2, 3, and 4. It didn't work out for anybody. So we'll see, but hopefully I can, knock on wood, I can break the pattern.
Please do. If it does go poorly, just let me know. I'll tell you where we meet every Sunday in the church basement for coffee and donuts. Yeah.
Perfect. All right, let's take a break, and we're going to get back and talk about game week 5. A quick thank you to all of our Patreon supporters. If you want to support the podcast, go to patreon.com/alwayscheating. Keeps the lights on, Brandon, the internet lights on, the WordPress lights on, or not WordPress, Squarespace, right? We're on Squarespace.
That's right.
Yeah, that's two free plugs right there, unpaid for plugs.
Two great ways to have a website just got plugged up this podcast.
But go to patreon.com/alwayscheating to do that. We talked earlier about the Harvey Milk Mustache FA Cup, or if you're an American sports fan, NCAA tournament style knockout tournament, and that begins in game week 5. So you have 1 week to get yourself in and ahead of that. And if you're already a Patreon supporter and you want to join it, just make sure you're in our mini league, because that's what we're going to use to generate the bracket, which will be available on Saturday morning.
Yeah. And if you want to say thanks and join the Patreon, you get some other stuff, including our extra podcast every week, the week in review for our Patreon league, courtesy of Mini League Mate. This is a great new feature we've added this season, which is a huge data dump and lots of really helpful infographics about how your team compares to the 500 plus other teams that are in our Patreon league, and all sorts of other stuff, including us hanging out with you on Slack this Saturday. All right. And a thank you to new Patreon supporters. We'll start at the Lord Sorlot tier. Big thanks to Chris Hunter, Muhammad Ismail, and John Lucas. And new Pookie patrons, thank you to the Bearded Slug, Jack Hodginson, and Luke Price. Thank you so much.
Okay, game week 5. It will be upon us on Saturday, early Saturday morning. I like it. They're kicking off with a Merseyside Derby. Like, even without fans, they're doing this as an early morning match, maybe to avoid people congregating outside the stadium or something.
Who knows?
Yeah. I wonder if Everton actually wanted Liverpool to win their match last week, just so that this could be a proper 1-2 top of the table clash.
Yeah. Now it is just the title holders in waiting, Everton, taking on lowly mid-table dwellers, Liverpool, just really down and out. I'm curious to see what happens too, because the theory on Manchester City meeting Leeds in game week 4 was, oh, City are really going to batter Leeds because of the way that Leicester took them out at the knees the week prior. This is going to be a blood in their mouth revenge game, so to speak. So I don't know how much water that carries going into the Merseyside Derby, where Liverpool had the same thing happen to them against Villa. What are they going to be able to do against Everton? I think it's going to be a really tight game.
I think so too. And it's a hard one to judge, because you have most of these players going off an international break, or you have them recovering from COVID, in the case of Thiago and Sadio Mane. Van Dijk, 99% sure, went to play for the Netherlands.
Yeah, he did.
Trent, obviously playing for England. I know Robbo played 90 minutes for Scotland this morning. So, just players, basically their whole defense is away right now on international break. And so it's not like they're going to spend 2 weeks like just drilling down and just becoming like, this perfect defensive unit before the start of next week's match. And so, in some ways, I think it's the fans that have a longer memory. The reason these athletes are so good is because they just shrug it off. They just lose a match. And
it's a job.
Yeah, it's a job. Exactly. So with all that said, we do have 5 questions, Brandon, for game week 5. So let's go through those questions. First one is, which back from injury / transfer deadline players should we consider ahead of game week 5? So Richard Harwood says, how should the return of Pulisic, Bale, and Aguero, it's quite a trio, influence our planning for the coming game weeks? So, what do you think?
Well, I think Pulisic is the one that stands out here, just given the fact that he's the one who we've actually seen on the pitch after coming back from injury in the league. I think he got some minutes at the end of game week 4. Whereas Bale and Aguero now pictured back in first team training. But what precisely does that mean? I don't know. And the nature of, or the timeline of Jesus coming back, like if Jesus were fit, as we came up to game week five, I would assume that Jesus plays over Aguero, even if Aguero were training with the first team. So, and Bale, we've kind of already discussed. So Pulisic is a player that is probably, we could say, is the most fit of those three, and the one that could be most likely to impact a team that needs that type of player. So Chelsea have just had trouble finding a motor to start the season, and Pulisic could bring that extra sauce. So I like him amongst these options.
Yeah. I think it's really, I don't know how I feel. I don't feel great about any of them, to be honest. And I think that also applies to the transfer deadline players. You have Cavani, Alex Telles. Alex Telles, by the way, I just think that's a cool name. He's like Alex Telles just sounds like like somebody who'd be good. It sounds like the name of someone who's going to replace poor old Lukey Shaw. You know, it's like, oh, like, you love you old Luke. Like, you know, you're not the fastest, you know, or not good at defending, but you know, it's like you put in some good shifts.
You can't do much. You can't do much.
But you tried hard.
Yeah.
Not to be super mean to Shaw. I know a lot of people love Luke Shaw, but I think that Telles is, you know, if you could identify one of the problem areas for, and yet it was certainly left back. So I think that he probably does help that team, but from a fantasy perspective, I think we probably need several weeks, especially just given what a mess things are right now. And they don't have Martial for the next three matches now too. It's kind of a nightmare start for them.
Wait, let's see. Cavani isn't in the game yet. I felt like I saw his price as
$8 million, isn't it? Right? I saw his price come in at $8 million. Has he not been? He's not been added yet.
Let's see. I'm just bumming around the FPL stats page. Maybe I need to hit refresh. But
no, I don't see it either. It's weird. Okay.
Yeah, that is because I remember seeing the very appealing price point, especially for somebody who. You know, Martial serving his red card suspension, you'd think. Well, I mean, this is a straight diss to Odiena Gallo, where Manchester United wasn't like, Gallo, it's your dream to play for Manchester United. Now we're good. We're going to bring in this old timer Edison Cavani. Yeah. I think he'll be all right, and I think that's kind of appealing. But most of these players that we're talking about, they're just straight up way too expensive. Like Pulisic, 8.3. I'm not even going to talk about Bale now, but Aguero, for somebody who you don't know who's going to start or not at 10.5, you've made the case for Harry Kane at the same price, who is in form and a lock to start. There's just so much like risk with your 4.5 defenders, Josh, is one thing. Risk with these 8 million plus players seems just beyond what I'm willing to handle.
Yeah, I think that's really the Saeed Benrahma one is the one that I'm maybe the most excited about, just because he's going to join a West Ham team that could use him, to be quite honest. Although they've done pretty well the last couple of weeks, but
I was going to say, could they use him? I feel like they've got enough players.
Yeah, I don't think West Ham is like solved. You know, like I don't think they've like solved Premier League football. They could use a really talented player.
I wonder with Benrahma if it was a buy for them where they could afford to buy him and it's just an investment, where it's a player that maybe they can look to later on in the season, or that's an asset for the books that they can loan out, or a player whose value is only going to increase and they'll just bank that.
Brandon, this is like me playing a wild card in game week five, just strength to strength. You know, that's what me and West Ham do. Okay. That's sure. Kind of that's why we're both perennial winners, you know, just,
absolutely.
Just, yeah.
Always winning.
So yeah, I think you're right on the price point is what makes all of these players way too risky. Aguero will be exciting eventually. And I do like to have one premium forward on my team just because they typically, they're often very captainable, because they're just so consistent. They may not always get the massive 19-point Grealish style returns, but they're really, really steady players to have in your squad. And Kane turns into Aguero very easily, so I think that may be a move I make long term. All right, so talking about Grealish, Brandon, he's on everyone's. This team is on everyone's mind right now. Talked about Martinez a little bit, but question number two is: do we trust Aston Villa now?
I think we do. I think we trust them enough to get Jack Grealish for sure. I don't know that we trust Villa enough to just go whole hog and build a wild card around them. But talking about price points, the Villa attack is, if we expect them to consistently score goals, even if it's just 2 goals a week for Villa, I think Grealish at 7.1 is great value. The problem that Grealish is going to have to overcome this season is, can he outproduce a player like James Rodriguez and say, God forbid anything happens to James Rodriguez, Grealish would be straight into my squad at that price point. So I think the challenge for me as I think about this is there a way for me to turn Daniel Podence into Jack Grealish somehow? Can I find that money? And I think what I could see happening is actually moving to an Aston Villa double up in my squad where Danny Ings drops to Ollie Watkins and Podence goes up to Jack Grealish. You know, kind of as I was setting the table for this discussion, I think that might be slight overkill, but I think we see where I'm going. And I think I would definitely favor Grealish over Ollie Watkins if we're talking about those picks.
Yeah. I mean, I would favor Grealish over Watkins too, just given Grealish's track record. I mean, Watkins did look excellent in that match though. And he scored a boatload of goals last season for Brentford as well in the championship. And every year there's one championship striker who comes up, and at least for a while, I mean, sometimes they just turn into Jamie Vardy, right? And they're just like awesome. But, you know, and you kind of don't know it usually for a couple of seasons. But often there's somebody who comes out just firing early on in the season. And it's early enough still that, like, you know, I mean, obviously Villa didn't even play in game week one because of the delay. So maybe it's Watkins. I mean, he's looked good in all of the matches so far. The returns just didn't come until this game week. He's available for 5.9 million. So he's got some interesting value there. And so, I mean, the whole team, I mean, the defense, the midfield, the forward lines, I mean, they're kind of the team we needed. We needed somebody cheap to emerge, somebody that could fill in all the other spots. If you're going to spend 11.5 million on Sterling and 10.5 on Kane, et cetera, et cetera. So,
I think that was the spot where we were struggling going into game week one with their drafts. Well, it was like, all right, there were a ton of midfielders that are 10 million and above that I want. And then there are no cheaper midfielders that I need. So that mid price bracket is really filling out. And now I've gone from that real pessimism going into game week one to now I could actually see a really solid, affordable midfield with a couple of premiums and two cheaper than Sun level midfielders consistently producing. Like, I'm just thinking of Grealish, Rodriguez, Salah, and a City midfielder. I think that would feel very balanced to me.
Yeah. Be interesting to see if we ever get to a point this season where we finally do shake off that I need to have a City midfielder feeling. I'm not ready to do it yet. Nor should we necessarily be jumping to do that. KDB's already had a very nice match. Raheem Sterling scored and picked up a couple bonus points. And in game week three, it's not like they've just been a complete disaster outside of that bizarre Leicester match, which they have not looked good as a team from a fantasy perspective. They've been okay. Just not. Like, I mean, KDB, I suppose, has been a little disappointed the last couple of game weeks.
Well, Josh, I think you're hitting question five a little early here, where
let's
you
jump
ask,
to it.
Do we keep the faith with City? We have a question from Climber who wants to know, I see a lot of Twitter wildcard teams without City players in them. What are your thoughts on this? So you're reserving a spot at the Sterling KDB price level. We've kind of given our thoughts on Foden, and Foden appears, I don't know if it's just for Foden or for the entire Manchester City squad. Like, is it a no-go zone until they get an actual number nine back in their starting 11? I think I might feel that way. I mean, it actually has been a blessing that for the last few seasons, you know, apart from Laporte's one purple patch 2 seasons ago, where we just have never had to think about City's defense at all. It's always just about the midfield assets, and when Aguero is fit, that is a pretty easy decision to make. But I think we sort of nailed it with your wild card, where we the FPL management community only need one city player in their teams right now. Is that is that even necessary?
Isn't it weird that they never keep a third forward in reserve? I mean, Man United are suddenly going to have Odion Ighalo just kind of hanging out, just taking up space, right? I mean, presumably now that Cavani has joined, and it's, I mean, I suppose you can use him for cups and stuff like that. But I mean, Sergio Aguero is famously injury prone. One of the great injury prone forwards, phenomenal and always at risk of missing a handful of matches for some international break, knock that he picks up or whatever.
There have been some great reserve strikers for fantasy over the years behind Aguero. Edin Dzeko, we've all had at least a moment with Dzeko in our teams.
Wilfred Bone.
Negredo, remember Negredo?
Yeah.
I mean, short-lived they might be. Balotelli, I recall, was a striker. That was another fun one. Jesus is just, he will not live in my memory the way those players do.
No, he's always been a little hard to love. I don't know. Maybe it's because of the fantasy thing just like infects your brain too much with this stuff. And you're just like, I don't know who to have. I just want to have Aguero. Why are you getting in the way, Jesus?
And I will be willing to admit that Jesus is a far better footballer IRL than Negredo ever was. Like, don't at me about that.
That's an LOL IRL for sure. But it's just strange that, like, so they go into the season knowing that Aguero is not going to be able to play for quite a while. They have one player in Gabriel Jesus, and then it's like Rory Delap's son is like the only option left. It's like, well, I guess we could play Rory Delap's son. That's like the only thing that's possibly available to us, like the richest club in the world. It's just strange. I don't know. This has nothing to do with fantasy, really, but it's just odd that they're it's a weird spot. I know that Sterling can play there, but he doesn't. It's not like a great natural spot for him. I'm just
making a note here for possible future team names for Brandon. Rory Delap's son.
So I think that ultimately they are still an extremely talented team who I think will consistently score goals. And I think that we talked about risks earlier on, and even though my team has plenty of risks in it, I still have a Man City player because there are certain risks that I just won't take. And one of them is not having an attacking player on one of the best teams in the league. I just think that they may have looked just mediocre so far, but long-term it's just going to crush you, and they're kind of expensive. So if you don't have them now, it's going to be very hard to get them in later. So it's better just to pull the trigger now and bring them in. So do I trust them? No. Do I feel like it's worth going without them? No. I don't. That answers the City question. Now we can move on to FPL Jacket Potatoes question, who says, by the way, some of the best questions from some of the weirdest Twitter. I feel like Jacket Potatoes appeared on many, many podcasts. He says, Son and Kane. And he says, if just one, which one? So we've talked a lot about Son and Kane already, but if you had to pick just one, Brandon, if you weren't in a wild card and you had two transfers available, you can only get one, which one would you lean towards?
I think I'd lean towards Kane because, like we were discussing with Ollie Watkins, and look at DCL, you've got some really affordable strikers to play alongside a 10.5 player like Kane. And then if you look at Son, great form as he may be in, there are so many other options that I could look to in my midfield. So Kane being on penalties, the great savior of FPL managers, that's tipping the scales for me. And you might say, well, Kane's getting the assists as the striker and Son's picking up the goals and he's a midfielder, his goals are worth more. I just still feel like Kane fits more into my concept of the balanced FPL team right now.
Yeah. I think that makes sense. I have a hard time picking between the two, to be quite honest. It's I see Son is so much cheaper, which I think has a lot of value. But I think, like you, I'm just sort of just give me the guy who always plays when he's healthy, plays every minute, and who is really seems very focused on providing assists this season too. It's almost like he's got like some kind of like bonus in his contract this year, where if he gets 10 assists or something, he gets you know, 20 million pounds or whatever. I don't know.
Yeah, he's trying to save himself from a Thinner-esque curse, perhaps.
Well, that could be that too. All right. So final question is, which, if any, bottom half of the table players are you thinking about targeting? So I could have probably phrased this question better, Brandon, but bottom half of the table, is there anyone worth looking at? Precog says, is Zaha worth considering? There's an unbelievable run of fixtures for Crystal Palace now from Game Weeks 5 through 14. I think he could do great things if he still played up front.
Yeah, fair enough. And I think Zaha started the season. He caught my attention in preseason, looked fantastic, carried through the first couple of weeks. Mm-hmm. Now Palace is kind of already reverting to sort of their standard, which is fine.
Sure.
But that does worry me. But just given what I keep coming back to the price point conversation, and I've been harping on these midfielders who are suddenly really great and really affordable. And what does Zaha do that Grealish and James Rodriguez don't do? Nothing, as far as I can tell. He does a little less than both of those options. So Zaha just kind of, there's no room for him. I mean, he could be, if we were near the tail end of the season and we're having this conversation, I think Zaha might be an interesting upside pick to be a little different. But that would be my read on Zaha. It's a funny question, though. The bottom of the table, I've just got the table pulled up right now, and Manchester City is in 14th place. Manchester United is in 16th place.
That's true.
Oh, I could come up with some pretty decent options for you somewhere down in the bottom of the table. But I think when you get to these – you know, looking beyond where the table is right now, early on the season, these lower table teams, I feel like it's only, I want either a striker or a defender. Like Burnley, you either want Chris Wood or you want Charlie Taylor. Right. If you look at, I mean, maybe West Brom, you've got Pereira. Maybe he's the guy. He's like slightly cheaper than the rest of the bunch, around 6 million. You know, maybe if he catches red hot form, but if you're talking about West Brom, I just don't see how red hot form will ever be part of that conversation.
Yeah. I mean, Dean Ghana too. I like some of the players on West Brom. They don't really fit into my team unless I did like a 3-5-2, which maybe I should think about that a little bit more. God, you know, honestly, if I did a 3-4-2, I probably would just get Jorginho, given how many freaking penalties we're seeing this season.
I'm looking at, they're in 8th and 9th place, but Leeds and Newcastle. Leeds just has a bevy of cheap midfielder options. Mm-hmm. Cliche being on PKs is really interesting to me. And then Saint-Maximin, who we both had in our Game Week 1 squad, he got injured. Didn't look great, but now he's like suddenly back in the conversation. Any considerations there?
No, of course not. No interest in St. Max. Glad you had a nice match, buddy. And, you know, congrats. I like you as a player. You're fun to watch, but no. I think possibly, I think that Aston Villa maybe is the team that, I mean, I know we talked about them a little bit already, but and I know that they are top second place right now. But I mean, long term, I don't think that's probably going to last. But John McGinn is a player that I talked about earlier on the season as someone who could end up being kind of really emerging this year as a cheap fantasy asset. And we kind of didn't like know how to rate him because he looked good at the start of last season and he was injured for almost the entire until the play resumed in the summer, and even then he was kind of working his way back into the squad a little bit. But he has double digit returns in his last two matches. He's 1.1% owned and his price is 5.5 million.
He's in that Daniel Podence replacement territory.
He is. Yeah, maybe a little underrated, and I think I would rather have him than Barkley. They're similar price points. Barkley is 5.9 million, but I think give me McGinn, Brandon.
Kimmy McGinn. I think that's a great when McGinn finally runs for president of the United States, you know, and he finally gets that U.S. passport in his pocket, that'll be what we put on the button.
Give me him again or give me Def. I like it. All right. So those are our five questions for Game Week 5. Just while we're talking captains, who is your captain at the moment for Game Week 5, Brandon?
Okay, so since Aubameyang has been taken off the table for me after game week two, it has been a wrestling match in my squad between De Bruyne and Salah. Right. And I've gotten it wrong with De Bruyne a couple weeks in a row. So right now, looking at my bus team, enough with the Sturm und Drang. It's on De Bruyne right now. But I just had this, I'm in my own head. I'm in my own head now about Salah, where I'm just like, well, I'm not feeling it. But he would be the choice's option. But as we were saying at the top of this segment, I feel like that Merseyside derby is it feels like a 2-1 Liverpool result to me. And maybe that's a 2-1 result in which Salah gets both the goals. I mean, if you said 7-2 result in favor of Villa in game week four, but Salah gets two goals and a bonus point, yeah, you're laughing and you're taking that as a captaincy option. So why would I move the armband off of Salah? I don't know, but those are my thoughts.
Okay. Yeah, I think you know, because I'm wildcarding this week, I have Kane and Son, so I think that Kane at home to West Ham is my pick. I will plan to have one Man City player, as we just talked about, and I will of course still have Mo Salah too. So I think those are all interesting options. I think that, and then KDB get pulled off a little early too for Belgium today, so it's just
around the 70th minute thereabouts.
Yeah, so I don't know. It feels like going three times with KDB does feel like a lot. You know, personally, the Mo Salah thing, the only issue there is it's that early match thing where it's just so miserable to, like, this is me last week with Timo Werner and James, bringing in a player who didn't play a minute and then holding a 9.5 million striker who plays as a winger and never gets the ball, you know? And I was just like, it was such a day ruining thing. And so you shouldn't really think that way as a fantasy manager, but it does get in your head a little bit. But the problem is, if you don't go Salah and you don't go KDB, I'm not really sure what the other options would be. I mean, would you consider like Jimenez a way to Leeds?
No, I wouldn't consider Jimenez. I think Danny Ings, I'm fine playing Ings against Chelsea. I think they're still trying to strengthen that defense, but they're very mistake prone. Mm-hmm. And DCL, there's no reason for you to bench a player that's in the kind of like scintillating form that he's in. So all three fine strikers that I'm happy to play, but none where I would be predicting large returns. And Salah and De Bruyne both have tougher fixtures, but they are far more likely to reach that double digit return. So those are the only two players that are options to me right now, as you say.
Yeah. I think that's fair. If you're just looking throughout the rest of the matches, I suppose if you had Vardy, maybe Vardy at home to Aston Villa would be a reasonable shout there as well. All right. Maybe Bruno Fernandes, if you had him, went to Newcastle. That'd be a little differential pick, but
yeah, something. Mm-hmm. It's guaranteed to be. There's always a penalty for Manchester United. That one you can take to the bank.
Take to the bank. On that note, we're going to take a break to the bank, and then we're going to come back with our shortest lightning round ever, Brandon.
Hey gang, even though sports had a break, your business didn't. You have to keep moving, and that makes hiring more important than ever. Indeed is here to help. Indeed.com is the number one job site in the world because Indeed gets you the best people fast. Unlike other sites, Indeed gives you full control and payment flexibility over your hiring. You only pay for what you need. You can pause your account at any time, and there are no long-term contracts. Plus, Indeed provides powerful tools to make your search that much easier. Right now, Indeed is offering our listeners a free $75 credit to boost your job post, which means more quality candidates will see it fast. Try Indeed out with a free $75 credit at Indeed.com/BlueWire. This is the best offer available anywhere. Go right now to Indeed.com/BlueWire. Terms and conditions apply. Offer valid through December 31st.
Brandon, the wait is finally over. Football is back. You may not be at a game this year, but you can still be in on the action at BetOnline. And Brandon, you can be in the game at a game in a lot of places in America right now. It's kind of shocking. lots of football matches in particular. BetOnline is going the extra mile to make sure you can get in every possible chance to win this season, from game spreads and totals to team, player, and coaching props. BetOnline gives you more options to wager than anywhere else. You can get all in on their season open bonuses today and start off wagering on a wins, division, and championship futures all day, every day. Head to BetOnline today and take advantage of all the great sign-up bonuses. Don't forget to use code BLUEWIRE at betonline.ag. That's BLUEWIRE, all one word. BetOnline, your online sportsbook experts.
All right, fellas, 2020 has made it hard for us to stay as hygienic as we should be. Luckily, our partners at Manscaped have made it easy to turn your bathroom into your own private dong salon. Yeah, that's right. Yeah. This is some spicy copy here, Josh. Manscaped is on a mission to change the grooming game with their below-the-waist grooming and hygiene products. And they've just released their products in the UK, Canada, and Australia. Manscaped going worldwide, baby. Let's talk about these products that you can get. You've got the Lawnmower 3.0 trimmer with replaceable ceramic blades. This is waterproof, so if you want to trim down there, you can even do it in the shower, and it holds a charge for more than 90 minutes. You can also get the Shears 2.0 nail kit, which is the perfect add-on to the Lawnmower 3.0 trimmer, and the perfect package. It comes with two free gifts with liquid formulations to complete your ball trimming routine. It's not just about the blades, Josh. It's all about the powders, the oils, and the lotions. Ungents. That make, yeah, really makes you feel good. All right, and these formulations, I should note, they're all vegan, cruelty-free, dye-free, sulfate-free, paraben-free, you name it. It's free. Okay. So if you want to check out all the great products at manscaped.com, use the code ALWAYS to get 20% off plus free shipping. Visit manscaped.com, fill up that shopping cart, and use the promo code ALWAYS. Upgrade that dong salon with truly luxurious products at Manscaped.
All right, Brandon, back. Lightning round. Got a short lightning round this week with short answers too. Jimbo says, after a really poor start and game week already planned, is there a need to further upgrade and try to seek out high scoring, low ownership players to recover your position? Thinking here of Barkley, Brewster, Pulisic, or Ziyech, perhaps.
Jimbo, it's too early for that kind of talk. I think we're not in recovery mode yet. I think for me, like I had a tougher, I'm in that large group of managers who had a tough start. So for me, it's less about trying to recover ground to get back to that peloton that's like in the top 500,000. Right now, I'm just trying to get the right team together. So I think you're going counter to that logic by reaching and trying to find these wild picks that are highly risky. I think for us who are just trying to recover, I think start consolidating and trying to find safe, consistent picks that will put you on that steady footing. So I like what you were saying, Josh, about wild carding from a position of strength. And I think that that's applicable just to FPL strategy minus the wild card. The type of moves that an FPL manager can make when you're operating from a position of strength, I feel like you're a little more free. That's kind of a narrow way of thinking about it, but I think that would be my advice to Jimbo, is you're not operating from a position of strength, so don't act like it.
Yeah, I mean, the thing about wildcarding from a position of strength, if that's what I'm doing, I mean, to me, you know, in some ways, I feel like I do see a lot of problems that need to be fixed. It's just not the big expensive players that I'm moving around. And I think that's where a wild card position of strength can really help you, is because you're not in that position where you're like, oh my God, I just dropped this 10.5 million player who I know is good, and the second I dropped him, he's going to taunt me. It's like if I drop like Danny Ings. Like, Danny Ings is a really good player, but he's fairly low ownership. His team isn't that good. I if he does well, it's not going to feel like a season ruining mistake the way the Sun owners have had to suffer the last few weeks, where they're like, oh my God, I keep transferring this guy out for a hit and he's scoring 20 points in the match to take him out. Like, that would be so maddening. And like, I because I've been there before, I can really empathize with it. But yeah, I completely agree with you. Do not gamble this early. I don't think it's wise. It's just not
You know, it might be fun, Josh. I mean, sure. If you want, if Jimbo wants to argue that's making fantasy fun again, then more power to you. But you know, you ask Jimbo.
Yeah, to me, the gamble would be to gamble on players who have done well so far but are unproven. I think that's enough of a gamble. I mean, this is the, you know, Barkley, Brewster, Pulisic, Ziyech. I mean, none of these players have done anything. So that's just way too much of a gamble, in my opinion. All right. Neil says, your views on keeping 0.5 or so in the bank for rainy COVID-19 days and crazy price rises.
Yeah, we touched upon this earlier about the idea of planning for COVID like you can control it. And you just can't. And I think you have to play the game week in front of you. You have to just make decisions based strictly on FPL. I don't know that we can predict if anything can happen, if anything will happen with COVID. And if it does, it'll probably be a disaster. And 0.5 in the bank is not going to save your day.
won't be nearly enough. Yeah.
Yeah. Either it won't be enough, or listen, you could solve the same problem with nothing in the bank, but a willingness to take a -4. Sure. And I think for me, it's less holding back on my team and keeping some, making a compromise somewhere so I can have some money in the bank for some fictional event that might happen, or non-fictional event that might happen, as opposed to just knowing there could be a point in which I have to take some transfer hits because of that. And I think it's a better strategy to just be willing to take the hits.
Yeah, me too. The only thing I'll say is that, sometimes you should keep money in the bank. Like if you are in a wild card or whatever, and you're burning transfers and you have the team that you want and you still have 0.5 million or 1 million or 2 million or whatever, there's a temptation sometimes to spend all that money, you know, like, oh, I have this money. Like, why am I wasting it? But, so yeah, I think that for me, typically if I have 0.5 million left or whatever, I've got 0.4 million right now on my current wild card. If I find a place to spend that, I'm definitely going to, and I'm not going to worry about price rises and COVID risks. Benny Blanco says, as usual, lots of talk about price changes and the importance of squad value. Shouldn't we be more focused, though, on the selling of your own players? When you drill down on that, doesn't it suggest the gains aren't as large as they feel?
Yeah, that's true. From a strict team value point of view. But it's not about, it's not so immediate as that. I'm thinking team value is a conversation I think that's worth having just when you're looking ahead to when you wildcard at the end of the season. That's that's like the only time in which team value is a big game changer, when it's game week 30. You've got some double game weeks ahead of you. You're wild carding. And if you paid attention to your team value a bit, it could mean your team value affords you one extra 7+ million player. And that's where it earns out. Now, at this point in the season, if you're talking about buying this player or cashing in that player, yeah, I think Benny Blanco is right. Like, it doesn't add up to much. So, you know, why are we talking about it, I guess, would be the question.
Yeah. And, you know, I mean, sometimes I feel like I end up burning that value I accrue, like, more or less instantly, you know? So I don't think I typically end a season with very high team value. I'm often just shedding those players, you know, pretty fast. And so, I think in general, it's not worth thinking too much about team value. And I think the squad value thing is, I mean, to me, it's more like, I'm going to have to get this player eventually anyways. And so that's why I would buy them now. Like, you know, if Dominic Calvert-Lewin just continues to perform every single week the way he has been, then suddenly a 7 million player, you're going to have to get him for like 8.4 million or something. Or just, you're going to stubbornly hold off all year while they keep banging him in. And that's like the recipe for a really bad season. So sometimes you just have to bite the bullet and get them as they're on the way up.
Well, something we've seen too with the player value this season is like a guy like Sadio Mane, who's already decreased in value. There are players, this happened to Danny Ings as well. If Timo Werner ever gets his season going, these players have all dropped in value. They'll be cheaper for you to get in. So there's a third way for you to think about it, Benny, is should you now look to buy players who are in theory undervalued?
So lots of different ways to think about it, Benny. But I think the takeaway is that he's wrong. right? I think we can. Final question from Danny Mack. I'm not even sure I know the answer to this question, Brandon, but I'll just ask it to you then, see if you have an answer. What is your favorite formation this season?
None. I'm looking at a 4-3-3 going into game week 5 with Podence on the bench. But I have yet to actually crack the code on any other formation apart from a 3-4-3. And yeah. So that would be my default. But yeah, I don't know because I haven't gotten my FPL season going yet.
I'm looking at a 4-4-2 right now, most of the time at least. I guess like the team I shared with you, my wildcard team, I've got a 3-4-3, but this is because Sheffield United play at home to Fulham in game week 5. And if I'm going to have Brewster, I'm certainly going to start him at home to Fulham in game week 5. But do I keep Brewster? Probably not. So I tend to default to a 3-4-3 as well. And I try, you know, it's just things are changing so fast. I mean, you know, 2 weeks ago, it seemed like just get Trent and Rabo and you know, your problems are solved. Mm-hmm. And then they conceded 7 goals and they lost their keeper. And you're like, why would you have any of these players? It's just like, it's funny how the fall from like, once you eliminate Trent and Rabo, you're like, well, why do I have any defenders? It costs more than like 4.6 million or something. So yeah, it's interesting. And, you know, if you feel like you don't really trust your defense, why would you have 4 of them out on the pitch at any given time? You know, you just, why not just spend that money up front? So lots of tricky decisions, Brandon. But I think 3-4-3 is typically my favorite formation. And, you know, I would like the idea of trying to tinker with a 3-5-2. I've just never quite, you know, you just need a really good fifth midfielder to make that work.
You do, and you have to have a lot of confidence in, you know, playing one or two up top consistently. And I feel like any formation that involves 5 across the middle, you're basically there are no other options at that point. You don't have a lot of rotation, if any.
Yeah, I don't know why 4-4-2 feels cleaner to me, like a little, you know, like easier to. I don't know. I mean, I feel like I've never seen player like teams with 3-5-2s where it like really like the, you know, like it was just like a winning strategy long term. It feels like a kind of fluky 1 week strategy.
Right.
All right. That's the pod. That's it. See, we were pretty short in the lightning round. Maybe not 30 seconds short, but pretty short.
Who's keeping track?
Not me. Thank you for listening. Good luck in game week 5. We'll be back at midweek with a Patreon supporter podcast, probably on Thursday or maybe early Friday. We've been doing some early Friday ones after all the press conferences are done. So if you want to support the pod, if you want to get into that Harvey Milk Mustache Cup, go to patreon.com/alwayscheating. And thank you to all of our current Patreon supporters. Brandon, would you please give our producers a quick thank you?
Big thanks to producers Trevor Ingerson, Mike DePietro, Chris Howell, Andy Penn, Martin Savage, Brian T, the Big Gaffer, Bob Ascoon, Jeff Husby, Ben Grant, James Holland, Jazz Binning, Dave Wagner, Lodahl, Nick Wright, Jim Payne, Brian Chin, Blair Jacobson, Travis West, Victor Forberg, Skoging, Paul Herzig, Kyra Christine Lalang, Andy Portlock, Toothless Gibbon, Lindsay Rostel, Anton Markov, at FPL Merch, Kerry Swanson, Paul Scanlon, Kieran Screeton, Francis Mann, Chris Carter, Bluno Stu, producer Matt, Mikey Uwong, Bruce Kerr, Alper Paxoy, Nicholas Verdonkis, Sam Schauer, Henry Baker, and Will Husby. Don't forget, subscribe to the Always Cheating Podcast. You never miss an episode. Wherever you find podcasts, you can also leave us a rating and a review, especially on Apple Podcasts. We would really appreciate that. Give us a follow wherever you find social media. Josh, we're on Twitter most of the time. That's the best place to follow us. But we're everywhere. True.
Not next Saturday, though.
No, we will be on Slack all day Saturday hanging out with just our supporters. That's going to be a lot of fun. For any information, anything you missed, just visit us at alwayscheating.com.
That's it. All right. See you guys next week. Bye.
Poku forever.